Hello, and again, welcome to the Labyrinth Library Podcast. How are you doing today? Oh, me? Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you. Thank you very much for asking. It's very considerate of you, really. Yeah, it's been a good week. Still going to work, still getting up at 5 o'clock in the god-awful morning, but, you know, it's worth it. It works out well. And, yeah, other than that, life is life, and I can't really argue too much with that. I did do something this week that's a little bit unusual for me as a reader, I should say, is that I dropped a book. Usually, if I get a book, even if I'm not that thrilled with it, I'll go all the way through, because that's just how I am. I'm kind of tenacious with books. But this time, no, I just couldn't get into it. It was The Yiddish Policeman's Union by Michael Chabon, or Chabon. And I know it's supposed to be really good. I've heard a lot of people say a lot about it. When I read Maps and Legends, he talked about where he got the idea for the book, and I thought it was a great idea. But I started it twice, and it just didn't work for me. So I'm putting it aside. I'll go back to it another time, maybe when I'm in a little better headspace. In the meantime, I'm on to Surely You're Joking, Mr. Feynman by Richard Feynman. But that is neither here nor there. That's something for another day. This week, as I said, we're doing a little bit of science this week. Science is always good. And we're dipping into Bad Astronomy by Phil Plait. Great book. Good fun. So, let me ask you this question. What do you think you know about astronomy? Now, I'm saying if you're not an expert. I mean, I know there's some of you out there who enjoy astronomy a lot, and you've probably been following it for a long time. Maybe you know all the constellations, and you were one of those kids. But for those of you who don't have a lot of astronomy training, what do you think you know? For example, what causes us to have seasons? Please write your answer. Number two pencil will be fine. I'll wait. Please pause the podcast right here. No cheating. Okay, all right. Now, if you said that it is our distance from the sun, right? So closer to the sun is summer, farther away from the sun is winter. Sorry, you're wrong. Or how about why the sky is blue? Now, if you think that the sky reflects the sea, no, wrong again. Otherwise, what would Kansas have? It would be a wheat-colored sky. You know, think about it that way. Or maybe you think that the moon's tidal effect makes people crazy, right? Werewolves and all that stuff. Or that an egg can only stand on end if it's the vernal equinox. Or that an alignment of the planets will cause a terrible buildup of gravity that will kill us all. All wrong. But you know, you would not be alone. For a society as technologically advanced as ours, and if you're listening to this right now, then chances are good you live in a technologically advanced society. The general public has a big problem with science in general. People see it as being too hard to understand or too removed from their daily lives. Politicians bemoan the fact that American school children are falling behind in science, but science funding is almost always on the list of cuts that can be made to save money. It's right ahead of brass band and theater club. We love technology, but we hate science, and that, my friends, is a path to certain doom. But of all the sciences, astronomy is probably the worst understood. A lot of people still confuse it with astrology, which is probably part of the problem right there. You see, for millennia, we have thought about the planets and stars as celestial things, unknown and unknowable by such base creatures as ourselves. It's only in the last 100 years or so that we've been able to rapidly improve our understanding of the universe, and, well, popular knowledge just hasn't caught up with that yet. And so, bad misconceptions of astronomy persist in public imagination. Fortunately, we have people like Phil Plait to set the record straight, and that is indeed what he does in this book. Now, while there are many educators out there who believe that a wrong idea, once it's implanted, is impossible to eradicate, Phil Plait sees it as a teachable opportunity. For example, take the commonly held belief that on the vernal equinox, and only on the vernal equinox, you can balance an egg on its end. Now, many people believe this, and it's an experiment that's carried out in classrooms around the country every March. Teachers tell their students, the local media tell their viewers, but nobody ever stops to ask, well, why? Why would this day, of all the days in the year, be so special? And more importantly, how can we test that assertion? Well, fortunately, that's within the powers of any thinking individual, and it should be the first thing teachers do once they've finished having fun balancing eggs. Try and do it again on the next day. If you can balance an egg on April 3rd or May 22nd or August 30th or September 4th or any other day of the year, then you have successfully proven the equinox egg hypothesis wrong. Congratulations! You're doing science! And I would just like to add here, by the way, I've tried balancing eggs on their end. I don't have the hang of it. I know Phil's been doing it a long time. You give him eggs and he'll have them all set up on the table, but I haven't been able to pull it off yet. If you can balance an egg today and send me a photo. I'd love to see it. Anyway, maybe you've heard the story, another story, misconception, that you can see stars from the bottom of a well or perhaps a tall smokestack. This is because, as the idea goes, the restricted amount of light will not wash out the stars so much, giving you a chance to do some daytime astronomy. Well, there's an easy way to test this too, if you have an old factory or something like that nearby. And what you'll discover is that no matter how much you try to restrict your view of the sky, it'll still be washed out and you won't see any stars at all. One more good one that a lot of people believe. The moon is larger in the sky when it's near the horizon than when it's at its zenith. Again, this is something very easy to test. Go out as the full moon is rising, looming large in the sky, or so it appears, and hold up an object at an arm's length. A pencil is usually recommended. Make a note of the moon's apparent size as compared to, say, the eraser. Then go out again when the moon is high in the sky and repeat your observation. The moon appears to be the same size, no matter how it might look to you in your head. Now, of course, there's a lot of science into why these things are the way they are. The chicken egg thing is because there's no singular force that's only acting on chicken eggs and only doing so on one day of the year, which is not even universally regarded as the first day of spring. As for the inability to see stars in the daytime, that's because that pesky atmosphere of ours scatters a lot of the light coming from the sun, so light appears to come from everywhere in the sky. The only thing you're likely to see in a blue sky is the moon, and maybe Venus if you're really sharp-eyed and lucky. The moon illusion is actually not well understood. It's probably not the brain comparing the moon with objects in the horizon, because the effect also works if you're out at sea. It might be a combination of competing psychological effects that deal with distance, none of which can accurately deal with how far away the moon is. Regardless, all of these things are easily testable by anyone. You don't have to be a scientist. You don't need a degree. You don't need a white lab coat unless you're into that kind of thing. Anybody can do it. The problem is that so few people take that extra time to actually test them or even think that they should. So there are a lot of myths and misconceptions that take a little more expertise to explain, such as why tides and eclipses happen, how seasons occur, and why the moon goes through phases. But these explanations aren't very difficult and are well within the understanding of any intelligent adult. Unfortunately, there are a lot of myths that are stubborn, entrenched into the heads of people everywhere, and very hard to get. Not the least of these are the beliefs that UFOs are alien spacecraft, and that we never went to the moon. Interestingly enough, both of these rest on the same basic problem. We can't rely on our own brains, stupid meat brains, to accurately interpret the data we see. Plate recounts a story where he was mesmerized by some strange lights in the night sky once while watching a 3 a.m. shuttle launch. They seemed to hover in place, making these strange noises, and it wasn't until they got much closer that he was able to see them for what they were, a group of ducks that were reflecting spotlights off their feathers. Our brains believe things and interpret the observations to fit those beliefs, so when the dust on the moon doesn't behave the way we expect us to behave, some people believe that to be evidence of fraud rather than the natural behavior of dust in a place that is not the Earth, with different gravity and no atmosphere and different types of dust. We are creatures of story, really, which is why we like conspiracy theories and astrology. We want the world to make a kind of narrative sense, so often the first explanation we come up with is a story that sounds good. Unfortunately, just because the story sounds good, that doesn't make it true. He also takes a swipe at bad movie science, but, you know, in a good-natured manner. Even he admits that movies are more likely to favor story over science, but there are some common errors that make it into so many science fiction films. Sound in space, people dodging lasers, deadly asteroid fields. These things might be dramatically interesting, but they're all bad science. I mean, I have to admit, I've done this, I've watched TV and I've watched movies, and bad science can actually take me completely out of the story. I'll give you as an example the TV show Heroes. Now, back in the first episode, when it still seemed like the coolest idea ever, one of the inciting incidents of the story was this solar eclipse, right? I'm sure you remember, if you watched the show, you remember that first episode where the moon moves in front of the sun and it's big and the whole eclipse image is a recurring image in the show. And the eclipse was seen by people in Texas, New York City, and Tokyo at the same time. And I was watching and I saw this and I almost started screaming at my television because that's not possible. If you can see the total eclipse in Texas, you can see maybe, if you're really lucky, but probably not, a partial eclipse in New York. You might not even see anything in New York. And when there's a high noon sun in Texas, it's the middle of the night in Tokyo. And that's really basic information that, honestly, the producer should have been able to get. And they didn't. And it drove me nuts. You will note, for the record, by the way, that I have no problem with people who can stop time or read minds or heal themselves up or do any of the other stuff that the characters on the show could do. That, I had no problem accepting. My disbelief was suspended. But screw up one simple astronomical thing and I'm out. I'm done. Forget it. I should have known then. It took me 3 more seasons before I could finally quit Heroes. But that's it. That's pretty much where I draw the line. You can see what I find important, can't you? Yes, but I digress. And while it would be annoying and pedantic to pick out every example of how the rules are bent for sci-fi, you know, please, why would the aliens come all the way to Earth to steal water when it exists out in the Kuiper Belt? I scoff at your attempt. That, by the way, was an absolutely unacceptable imitation of the comic book guy from Simpsons. I profoundly apologize for that, but I can't think of it any other way. These movies and TV shows, with all of their mistakes, offer a great opportunity to teach people how science works. One of the things that I've always liked about Plate is his obvious enthusiasm for not just astronomy, but for science in general. Here we have this excellent system, science, to cut through the lies that our brains tell us and get closer to knowing what's actually going on. Science forces us to question our assumptions, to look at things from many points of view, and arrive at a conclusion that best describes the phenomenon we're observing. So when Plate talks about science, he is not condescending or dry or super intellectual the way so many people imagine scientists to be. He's excited that he gets to use this amazing tool for understanding the universe, and he wants other people to use it. So as I said at the beginning, if you are an astronomy fan like myself, you probably won't learn much new information from this book. But hopefully you will be reinvigorated to go out there and look at the world through a scientific, skeptical eye. And you'll be willing to confront these misconceptions when next you come across them. Even better, you might start thinking about what else you think you know and how you can go about testing it. So let me give you a quote from Bad Astronomy. I like this. He says, when talking about why the sky is blue, "If a little kid ever asks you just why the sky is blue, you look him or her right in the eye and say, 'It's because of quantum effects involving Rayleigh scattering combined with a lack of violet photon receptors in our retinae.'" So that is Phil Plate, Bad Astronomy, explaining exactly why the sky is blue, and your little 6-year-old child should have no problem understanding that. So, as I said, I like Phil Plate a lot. I try to follow him on podcasts. He's a regular on the Skeptic's Guide to the Universe podcast and Are We Alone, the SETI podcast as well. He has an outstanding blog, which I highly, highly, highly recommend you follow. It's the Bad Astronomy blog. There's a link. I'll put up a link on the website. And he covers mostly astronomy. Occasionally, he'll dip into a few other things. But he's a lot of fun. And again, his enthusiasm is infectious. So of the modern astronomers, I've said before that I miss Carl Sagan, and I do, but of the modern astronomers, Phil Plate is definitely one of my favorites. So go buy his books, keep this man working. Next week, we are going to look at a book by another of my favorite modern astronomers, and this is the man known as the Pluto Killer. So find out who that is, and you can probably very easily guess which book it is that we're going to talk about. It's also one of the few books that got me an angry comment when I originally posted it over on LiveJournal. So that was kind of fun. Anyway, as always, you can email me and guess the book, and there'll be a fantastic prize, the likes of which you've never seen before. I can't tell you exactly what it is, for it would make me go mad. All right. But other than that, again, keep following us on Twitter, following the fan page on Facebook. I've started doing this fun thing where I'll give you a quote from a book and people have to guess what it is. It's all about interactivity, right? You know, connecting with the fans. That's you guys, the little people. I'm sorry. I spoke before I thought. You guys, the bedrock of the community. So that's about it for me tonight. I got some stuff to do. I have a lesson tomorrow I've got to teach over on Fahrenheit 451, and we're getting into Captain Beatty's big monologue in part one, and I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do with that. How to get a group of, you know, 16-year-olds to talk enthusiastically about the decline of intellectual rigor in the world. Go figure. But I hope that you have fun doing whatever it is you do, and I will see you next week. A text version of this review will be up on the blog, thelabyrinthlibrary.blogspot.com, along with any relevant links I can think of. If you have anything you want to say or any suggestions you'd like to make, please leave a comment and let me know. If you have a book you'd like to recommend, I'd be happy to hear it. If you would like to send me some email, send it to labyrinthlibrary@gmail.com. And if you like what you hear, please give a review on iTunes or become a fan on Facebook. This podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives license, so feel free to share it, but please don't sell it or change it. The music is courtesy of Kevin MacLeod at www.incompetech.com. Thanks for listening. I'll be back next week, and until then, keep reading.